listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. The stark facts of global greed, a disease as challenging as climate change, is the headline on Paul Buchheit's piece over on Alternet today. There is an extraordinary price that Americans and, frankly, people all over the world are paying for 34 years of Thatcheronomics and Reaganomics that has not been limited to the United States and the UK, but has spread like a virus around the world. And it includes this bizarre notion, as, well, what was the actor's name who played? Michael Douglas? Yeah, as Michael Douglas said in Wall Street, it comes from this notion. Check this out.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Right. And that, you know, defined the 80s and defined the transformation of America with the Reagan presidency, where we went from Jimmy Carter walking to his inaugural balls, walking back from the Capitol building to the White House, and inviting average people to his inaugural balls and not charging for them, to Ronald Reagan charging $1,000 to $10,000 a head, and people wearing, you know, super spiffy, very elegant, very expensive clothes, and making them basically just for big donors and famous people. So, you know, the question in my mind is, what is greed costing America? Let's just go through the list here. At least some of the things that are, I think, the low-hanging fruit, the obvious stuff on my list. Greed has cost us millions of people being incarcerated when they shouldn't have been. Their lives are destroyed. Their future earnings are wiped out. Their ability to vote in many states is no longer even exists. They can't participate. There's this block the box movement to make it against the law for employers to ask if you've ever been convicted of a felony. Have you ever been in jail? It's not going to succeed, or probably not going to succeed. But the reality is that they never should have been in jail in the first place. You know, we have more people in prison than any other country in the world, both on an actual number and per capita basis. Why? Because of greed. Because people are making money off people going to prison. We have a for-profit private prison industry. We have a for-profit industry, quote, fighting the drug war. These companies making drug testing kits and every other kind of thing. Running rehab clinics and everything. You know, enforced rehab is the new soft incarceration. Why? But why do they do it? Why is it written into our laws? Why are judges doing it? Because you can make a buck off it. Our public schools are being eviscerated. They're being destroyed. Why? Because you can make a buck off charter schools. And so you've got these private for-profit charter schools opening up, and they cherry-pick the best students, and they dump the poorer students on the public schools. And then, gee, what kind of predictable result comes out of that? Our healthcare crisis in the United States. You know, there's and the fact that, you know, it costs a fortune and still you can go bankrupt if you get sick. There's an amazing piece Liz Alderman and Stephen Greenhouse wrote for the international business section of the New York Times. It comes with a couple of different headlines. One of them is serving up fries for a living wage. And they tell the story, they open this piece with the story of Hampus Ellefsen. It's a fellow who lives in Denmark. And he works 40 hours a week at Burger King. And they open the story with his having paid his rent, paid all his bills, put some money in savings, and now he's preparing to go out with his friends and have a movie and a beer. How can he afford to pay all his bills and still have a leisure life that costs a little bit of money? Because in Denmark, nobody makes less than $20 an hour working in fast food. Nobody. There is no minimum wage in Denmark. But there are very large, very powerful unions. $20 an hour. Now, here's where it gets really amazing. American fast food workers, by the way, earn an average of $8.90 an hour, according to the article. And they quote this guy, Mr. Moore, Anthony Moore, down in Tampa, Florida, who is working at Burger King in the United States and can't pay his rent, can't buy food, can't pay his medical bills. Well, in Denmark, you don't never have to worry about your medical bills. Everything is paid for. It's free. But Mr. Moore here in Tampa can't even afford Burger King's insurance copays and coverage. By the way, in Denmark, fast food workers get 5 weeks paid vacation, paid maternity and paternity. They have a pension plan. They're paid overtime for working after 6 p.m. and working on Sundays. They get their schedules 4 weeks in advance. And employers can't send them home early, the article says, without pay just because business slows. What about turnover? Well, 70% of their employees are there for more than a year. Turnover of fast food joints in the United States, 20-30% after a year are still there. The average length of working at a fast food joint in the United States is 8 months. By the way, you would say, oh, well, you know, if the employees are making more than twice as much, the burgers must cost a lot more. A Big Mac in Denmark costs $5.60 compared to $4.80 in the United States. 80 cents more. Not so much. And in fact, HMS Host Denmark is a company, sort of like, you know, in the United States, you got these companies that operate restaurant concessions in airports and things. This is the biggest one in Denmark. They run the one in the Copenhagen airport, for example. And the guy who is the general manager, now this is the guy who's running restaurants. The guy who's the general manager of HMS Host, he says, and I quote from the New York Times piece, serving up fries for a living wage. He says, quote, the article says, he noted proudly that a full-time Burger King employee made enough to live on. Quote, the company doesn't get as much profit, but the profit is shared a little differently. We don't want there to be a big difference between the richest and the poorest, because poor people would just get really poor, Mr. Drescher added. We don't want people living in the streets. If that happens, we consider that we as a society have failed. The guy working at the Burger King in the United States, by the way, he says he even goes to work when he's sick because he can't afford to lose his job. In Denmark, paid sick time. In just the last 3 years, back to Paul Buchheit's piece in Alternate, in just the last 3 years, the bottom half of Americans, the bottom 50% of Americans, who 3 years ago had 2.5% of our nation's wealth, now it's down to 1.3%. The bottom half of Americans' workers have lost half of their wealth in 3 years. And the top half, if you look at everything except the top 1%, they lost two. He says the 36 million upper middle class households just above the median 6th, 7th, 8th deciles dropped from a 13.4% share to an 11.9% of this year. Much of their portion went to the richest 1% too. Total U.S. wealth, $84 trillion. Over $1 trillion moved from the bottom half of America to the richest 1%, and another trillion from the upper middle class to the top 1%. The billionaires are sucking us dry. Graham Nash was on Morning Joe this morning. I'll play that for you after the break. But he had some things to say about our billionaires, our landed gentry, our oligarchs, specifically the Koch brothers. But the question, what is greed costing the United States? It's costing us our health, in our food systems and in our medical systems. It's costing us our wealth. It's costing us our happiness as the middle class is disintegrated. Suicide rates are going up, particularly among working class men. What do you think it's costing us?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And can you think of any business that actually pays for the externalities they create? I'll get into that in more detail, too, after the break. And welcome back 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Louise in Bothell, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Louise, what's up?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good.
My question was, amazing article about, you know, the life in Denmark, and I was interested in finding out if their crime wave, you know, is lower than ours because these people can get out and, you know, and make a living.
Yes, the crime rate is significantly lower in all the Scandinavian countries than it is in the United States.
Wonderful. I just needed to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think people need to hear that more.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, what FDR said. The best welfare program is a job, and not just a job, but one that pays well. And
yeah.
the Northern European countries have figured that out. They pay their workers well, and they have them for a long period of time. They give them good benefits. And, gee, what a surprise. Society works.
Yes, and more people need to wake up.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. Louise, thank you very much for the call. Marty in Monroe, North Carolina, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Marty, what's up?
Hey, how are you today?
Good.
I was watching your show, and you was talking about how the Scandinavian countries do this and that for their citizens.
Right.
In this country, it's all about that dollar.
Right.
And slave wages. Because in this nation, when somebody enters into an agreement without a contract or represented by a union like myself, they're at the mercy of the employer.
That's right.
And as long as the employer can keep the middle class suppressed, they can make billions and billions of dollars and not have to pay any taxes on it. And then they get millions of dollars in tax breaks sent to them by the IRS.
Right.
WTF, government, get your head out of your rear ends and represent people that voted.
Well, here's the problem. The Republicans, the situation that you just described is the situation that the Republican Party actually wants. There were a number of good pieces of legislation that Nancy Pelosi passed during the 2 years that she was Speaker of the House, that would have reversed that trend. That would have increased taxes on rich people, that would have eliminated incentives for government, companies to move their jobs overseas, that would have provided incentives to bring jobs back home, that would have increased the strength of the right of people to unionize, that would have increased the minimum wage, that would have decreased the cost of health insurance, that would have minimized ripoffs by the credit card industry and the banking industry. All of these various things were passed by the House of Representatives. And most of them, when they got to the United States Senate, they actually passed with a majority, over 50% of the votes. There's 100 senators. They got more than 50 votes. And so according to the Constitution, these should be law. But because the Senate rules say that the Republicans can block a piece of legislation with a single-person filibuster in it, and it takes 60 votes to overcome the filibuster, and there are not 60 Democrats in the U.S. Senate. There's only 54, I think? Because of that, none of those pieces of legislation I just described passed. There have been serious and sincere efforts by Democrats since the FDR administration to make America safer and fairer and work better for average working people. And the Republicans have fought every single one. They've fought all of these, too. So, Marty, I'm with you, except rather than saying thank you for the call, rather than saying politicians, you know, get your head out of where the sun don't shine, we should be saying Republicans. Or we should be saying, Democrats, start standing up to them. Start calling them. And I know a lot of Democrats are standing up to them. We need to be calling Republicans out on this kind of behavior. This is awful stuff. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I was trying to figure this out this morning. I was noodling this in my brain. I mean, it's amazing the damage that's been done to America by greed. When Reagan, you know, motivated by greed, or at least, you know, the people who were funding Reagan were motivated by greed, in 1982, stopped enforcing the Sherman antitrust laws and stopped enforcing the laws that made it, well, the Sherman Act was the principal one that made it difficult for medium-sized and large companies to merge together into giant, basically oligopic companies, oligopolies. When Reagan did that, it began a process that now 33 years later, you look back and look at any sector of the American economy and you find it is dominated by three or four very large corporations that do not operate in anything that even resembles a marketplace, that operate in their own, you know, greed zones, basically. You look at food, whether it's fast food or whether it's food, whether it's groceries, whether it's food processing, whether it's growing food. Look at those. You look at clothing. You look at retailing. You look at computers. You look at medicine. You look at healthcare. You look at, I mean, you look at media, television, radio. Pick your industry. You're going to find four or five companies that basically dominate it. And within those industries, you're going to find people who are actually even very, very toxic. The fossil fuel industry, for example, the oil industry. This is an industry that lives off not just our subsidies. Not only do we just give them hundreds of millions of dollars a year or hundreds of billions of dollars a year in direct subsidies to the Koch brothers and their buddies in the oil industry. But, you know, and by, you know, the U.S. Navy protecting their products and everything. But they don't pay for their externalities. People get cancer because we burn oil. People get asthma because we burn oil and gas and coal. The mercury and, you know, there's all these neurological disorders that seem to be associated with mercury in our food supply. All these toxins. These companies don't pay anything for any of it. They socialize the cost to us. We pay all the costs. And every now and then, some voice comes along that just randomly surprises you and says, hey, wait a minute. This morning on Morning Joe on MSNBC, the top-rated show on MSNBC, the morning conservative show, Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski had Graham Nash as a guest, you know, formerly of the, I think it was the Hollies, right? Barbara Ann and all those songs. And then he went with Crosby, Stills, Graham and Nash. And then Crosby, Stills, Young, Graham and Nash, well, whatever it was. And Neil Young joined them. And he was on and he sang a song and Joe Scarborough strummed along with him and wasn't that cute. But at one point, he just went off on this rant. And at first, Mika's like trying to stop him. And then they just stand back and go, oh, can't stop this. It's going to make it worse. And then Joe at the end just kind of wraps it up and says, okay, we're going to move on from here, basically. Well, here's Graham Nash's rant on MSNBC this morning.
It's appalling how many climate change deniers there are in this world that are paid to make sure that the Koch brothers can still sell all the stuff to us. And I often wonder, don't the Koch brothers have children? Don't they have grandchildren? Don't they know what they're doing in this quest for more money? They're already one of the richest families in the world. How much more do you need? I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. How much more do you need? And so what is the price to America of greed? The price of the Koch brothers' greed and the hundreds of millions of dollars that they're spending to get Republican candidates elected this year. This year, if the Republicans take the Senate and hold the House, it is nothing more or less than a statement of the impact of five right-wing cranks on the Supreme Court and the Citizens United decision, saying that money is speech, corporations are people, and now billionaires can buy politicians. The Koch brothers basically own Scott Walker. They own Pat Roberts. They own Chris Christie. I mean, it's just, and it's not even the big names. I mean, it's now they're buying like county judges. It's amazing. So what's the cost of greed to the United States? We have more sickness. We have a less resilient healthcare system if Ebola comes to America in a big way. You got, well, Texas, you've got a quarter of the population of Texas uninsured because Rick Perry won't go along with Obamacare and expand Medicaid. A quarter. And the Koch brothers are running ads, this Generation America thing. They're running ads targeting young people saying, don't sign up for Obamacare. Creepy Uncle Sam. He wants to give you an exam in your private parts. Right. Why aren't we talking about the creepy billionaires? Why aren't we talking about the cost of greed? Why is that not in our media discourse? Oh yeah, our media have been conglomerated, merged and built to the point where they themselves are giant monopolies or oligopolies. So, of course, they're not going to call out greed. They're all about greed. Why is the media not talking about the, you know, half a billion dollars that's going to be spent or more by outside groups, by, you know, Karl Rove's buddies and the Koch brothers and their buddies? Why is the corporate media not pointing this out? Because they get all the money. All right, the Koch brothers throw $200 million into a campaign. Where does it go? Television advertising. So what is greed costing America? It's costing us our health. It's costing us our young people. We've got an entire generation now of young people, people in their 20s, by and large, and the generation coming up behind them, too, is going to be an even a worse situation, who are more than $1 trillion in debt because of student loans. This is something that up until 20, 30 years ago, before Reaganomics, did not exist in the United States. In fact, before Reagan was governor of California, California had free public education, free college. It's mind-boggling, the greed-driven Reaganomics, what it has done to damage America. Can you think of any companies that pay for their externalities?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Any billionaires or banksters or any, who pay for their cost to society? I don't know of any. And what in your mind are some of the things I'm missing about what greed costs us? The bad and the very, very exuckously ugly, the good. Senator Jeff Merkley, the Oregon senator, has put himself head and shoulders above the rest of his colleagues on Capitol Hill by becoming the first U.S. senator to endorse the legalization of marijuana. Legalizing marijuana is on the ballot in Merkley's home state of Oregon this election cycle, and the senator told Talking Points Memo recently that he supports the measure mostly because he thinks we spend too much money on the wrong things in our criminal justice system. Couldn't agree more, Senator Merkley. Just let's hope more of your colleagues come to their senses and endorse pot legalization as well. The bad. Foster's Daily Democrat. The New Hampshire newspaper is under fire for running an editorial bashing Democratic Senator Jeanne Shaheen that was, I kid you not, written by a dead man. Although dated as being published Monday, eagle-eyed journalists like Bloomberg's Dave Weigel quickly pointed out that that was impossible because its author is former New Hampshire House Speaker Marshall Cobley, who died in 2009. Apparently, the piece was actually just a reprint of a 2009 Cobley editorial in Foster's Daily Democrat, and the paper never intended it for it to be published. But still, I think it's safe to say that if New Hampshire Republicans have to rely on dead people to make their points for them, that says a lot about how desperate they are for anything even remotely rational sounding that would support Scott Brown. And the very, very ugly, the Westboro Baptist Church. What's it about Kansas? Right? Koch brothers, Sam Brownback, Westboro Baptist Church. America's least favorite religious group has filed a brief with the state of Kansas asking permission to intervene in the legal challenge to that state's same-sex marriage ban. The reason behind the request? They want to protect the Jayhawk state from God's wrath. Seriously, no joke. The brief argues that same-sex marriage will destroy Kansas and claims that it will cross a final line with God. The harm that will befall this state when the condign destructive wrath of God pours out on Kansans is the ultimate harm to the health, welfare, and safety of the people. I don't know what's worse, that the Westboro Baptist Church is still a thing, or that its arguments against same-sex marriage sound pretty much the same as the Republican Party's arguments against same-sex marriage. Either way, it's just very, very. So what does poverty cost America? Excuse me, what does greed cost America? Poverty is one of the costs of greed. We have poverty. You've got countries quite literally where you don't have poverty. The Scandinavian countries, you do not see homeless people. You do not, there are people who are low income, but everybody has full health care. Everybody has access to housing. Everybody has access to food. Everybody has access to free education. You may live humbly, but you can live. Harold in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray FM. Hey, Harold, what's up?
Hey, Tom. We are so glad to have you back on the radio here in Portland.
Well, thank you. Me too.
Be glad you weren't on that houseboat when that big storm blew through here this past weekend.
Yeah, Sean was telling me about it. Wow.
Yeah, it was nasty. I keep hearing you say that healthcare is free in Denmark and Germany and Scandinavian countries, and that's not actually the case. The citizens of those countries pay for the healthcare. They pay through it with their taxes. And
sure.
I think the important thing to realize is that that Burger King employee that you were talking about,
yeah.
he still pays a high tax rate and is able to pay all his bills and go out with his friends and have some sort of a normal life.
Right.
So people will often argue that the economic systems in Northern Europe don't work because of high taxes, but ask someone who lives there.
Yeah, it's a lie that they don't work because of high taxes. They, in fact, I would say that they work because of high taxes. And
you know, we actually went to Sweden this past summer, and we talked to a waitress who had come to the United States to be an au pair, and her family wanted her to buy an adjoining piece of property. And her answer was, "Are you kidding? I can't leave this. I mean, you know, I've got my education paid for. I've got my health care paid for. There's no way I'd move out here."
Yeah. Yeah, this is and you know, there's a reason why you don't have, you know, why we don't have an illegal immigrant in quotes problem with Scandinavians. It's like they're looking at us going, no, I don't think so. Harold, thanks so much. And thanks for listening to X-Ray FM. I called into Carl Wolfson's show this morning. Happy 2000 shows, Carl. And it's just great. Harold, thank you for the call. Rudy in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Rudy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Love the show, man. You hear me okay?
I hear you just fine, Rudy.
Okay. You know, I got to thinking about what you're saying about greed, and we have to really examine greed and the true essence of what it, what's the root of it.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be hatred? Could it be racism? All these things are truly, when you go back to the fabric, the fabric in which America was really built on.
Yeah.
When you start looking back into our history and looking at what this country was actually built on, greed is one of those things that kind of runs along with hatred.
Yeah, the early economy of the United States could not have existed without slavery. Slaves produced more wealth in the United States than any of the white people in this country. And I mean, this is well documented. And this morning, Louise and I were talking about this, and I just kind of rhetorically said, why is it that you've got all these countries in Northern Europe and some in Central and South America now that have woken up, have awakened and said, you know, this is nuts. People should not basically work at starvation wages. They shouldn't have to decide between food and medicine when they're working full time or even working part time. And Louise said, yeah, but our country, you know, the reason why I think we haven't woken up is because our country was actually founded on slavery. So it's not that big a leap for us to continue something that's not slavery, obviously, not anywhere near the horrors of actual slavery, but something that oppresses workers. It makes
perfect
sense.
Well, I mean, I guess what I'm saying also, too, is when you start looking at the core of what greed is something that is psychological. I believe that it's something that is learned along with hatred.
And I agree.
So, I mean, it's a hatred. Our culture is not right. And
yeah.
until we start really looking at the essence, I mean, what this is really about. Because I don't think there will ever be a policy that can be put in place. Our hearts and minds have to really understand what is wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, because when you really look at a rich person, I would think, I mean, I'm just a truck driver. I live okay. I mean, I can only drive one car. I can only, you know, sleep in one room. It's only so much that I can do with my money.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to do more, but I mean, greed is a disease.
Yeah.
It is something that psychologically
I'm absolutely with you, Rudy. In my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, when I was writing this book, I tracked down Professor Jack Forbes. He passed away a couple of years ago, but he used to be the head of Native American Studies at the University of California, Davis. He is himself a Native American. And he said that when white people first came to this continent, the natives characterize us as having Wetiko, W-E-T-I-K-O. It's an Indian word that means cannibal, essentially, someone who's willing to eat the life of others. And he said, you know, the Native Americans, were confronted with these three horrible choices. Choice one was be exploited by them, right? You know, just roll over and let them kill you, take advantage of you, steal your land, you know, rape your women, murder your young men, whatever, you know, which they did. That was choice one, not very palatable. Choice number two was to run away. And some tribes did that. The Shoshone, for example, where there was very, very low population, you know, 100 people per square mile in Nevada, they just ran away and hid. And so there's still some survivors of the Shoshone. But a lot of tribes couldn't run. There was no place to run to, or they were too populous, which left the third option, which is that we could take up arms and fight them. And he said the problem with that is we become them. We then become infected ourselves with Wetiko, with this greed and hatred and all these things that you're describing. And I think, frankly, Rudy, that we are suffering from a cultural mental illness, and the billionaires among us are the symptom, just like, you know, a zit is a symptom of a staph infection of the skin. I mean, the zits in America, the boils, the carbuncles in America are these billionaires. Rudy, thank you for the call. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. You got a minute, Michael. You got a list here of what greed is costing us?
Sorry, man. Okay, you just sort of stole my thunder there. Okay, you asked about what greed is costing us. Wetiko is costing us global climate change, broken families, GMOs, wars, the dumbing down of America's next generation, the loss of 60,000 factories, no health insurance for millions of people, and the result is, I'm from Boston originally, a New England, like you've said before, a Charles Dickens society where we have kings again, Wall Street, gated communities, private jets, yachts. They don't care about anybody but their own families. What do you think, Tom? Thank you.
I think you nailed it, Michael. I think that was a brilliant summary and a great list. And I'm guessing, you know, others will have things to add to it. But these are excellent. Michael, thank you for the call. These are what greed is costing us. Greed is costing us something. And historically, societies have figured out a way to regulate greed. In fact, historically, if you go back and you look at Aboriginal societies, if you look at Native American societies, you look at Aztec and Mayan societies, you look at the ancient European societies, Jefferson talked about this extensively with the Whig histories, what Europe was like before 3,000 years ago. What you find is that these societies did not look favorably on greed. It's that simple. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Which leads to the question, what causes greed among average people? And I would say it's the fact that they're being robbed blind by the genuinely greedy, the seriously greedy. Welcome back, Stephen, in Titan, Washington. Am I saying that right, Stephen? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yes, you are, Tom. Thank you for having me call.
Sure.
I just wanted to report to probably the country that here in Titan near Yakima, Washington, the growers are being forced to leave thousands of bins of apples in the trees this year, not being harvested. That's 800 pounds of bin.
Why is that?
And they didn't get enough contracts from the packing plant and the buyers. And one of the major packing plants is owned by a family called Evans, and they are the largest shippers and buyers in the country, and for some reason they're just leaving apples on the trees this year.
Huh. I wonder if that has to do with the same reason that McDonald's revenue is down, Burger King's revenue is down. I don't know about Burger King. McDonald's, Walmart's revenue is down. I went through the list yesterday. There's a bunch of American companies that cater basically to the middle and bottom half of the consumer marketplace. And they're all doing poorly because people who live at the middle and bottom half of the consumer marketplace are getting more and more wiped out. I mean, they're tapped out. They're maxing out their credit lines and things. I wonder if people are turning away from apples, you know, fresh fruit, which is healthy but a little more expensive, in exchange for processed foods.
Yep, I believe that's true, and that the apple growers, the farmers, are don't get subsidies like the other crop growers in the Midwest.
Yeah, like the high fructose corn syrup guys. They make out like bandits. Excellent point, Stephen. Thank you for calling and sharing it. Bob in Ontario, California. Hey, Bob, thanks for watching Free Speech on DirecTV. What's up?
Like I do every day, Tom.
Thank you.
You know, it's this greed thing. It's a terrible thing and a really big cancer on our society. If you think about the retirement portion alone, it perplexes me a great deal to try and understand why the one percenters, why the corporate moguls, why these people who sit in such a big position financially during the course of their life actually get to collect Social Security.
Yeah.
Corporations.
Well, let me just tell you. First of all, the top 0.1% is 100,000 households. The top 1% is about 1 million households. You want them to collect Social Security because everybody collects Social Security. If you start means testing Social Security, you turn it into a welfare program. And welfare programs are very, very easily cut. See Bill Clinton. They're not the rich people taking Social Security, Bob, are not draining Social Security. They're a bump on Social Security's butt, basically. It's no big deal. And it's just like the fraud, the people who are committing fraud against food stamps or Section 9 housing or whatever it is. There's some people who are, you know, ripping us off. They're taking things that they're not entitled to. That small amount of fraud, that small amount of breakage, that small number of people taking Social Security who are very, very wealthy, the small number of people who are taking food stamps who don't need them or are making a lot more money, that's the price you pay for having the programs. There's always going to be somebody gaming the program. There's always going to be a certain amount of what's called breakage in the retail industry. And it's acceptable. You just say that's the cost of the program. It's not a big deal. Bob, thank you for the call. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just once again, this is just amazing, this little moment this morning on Morning Joe on MSNBC where Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, et cetera, went off on the Koch brothers. Here he is.
It's appalling how many climate change deniers there are in this world that are paid to make sure that the Koch brothers can still sell all the stuff to us. And I often wonder, don't the Koch brothers have children? Don't they have grandchildren? Don't they know what they're doing in this quest for more money? They're already one of the richest families in the world. How much more do you need? I mean, seriously.
It's like the old Ted Kennedy clip, you know, when does the greed end? In fact, I think we've got that clip, don't we? I know I've got it over on the TV end. But it's like, when does the greed end? Gary in Minneapolis, listening on AM 950. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just want to say you're a wealth of information and a voice for justice and education for all of us.
Thank you, Ken.
But I'm talking about greed. I suggest that the listeners see that old movie with Bogart and Walter Houston, Treasure of Sierra Madre, that we understand what we're up against with these billionaires. But I'd also like to say you're talking about Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
I have distant relatives over there, but all my ancestors came from Norway and Sweden. And the minimum wage was $15 an hour in Sweden in 2008, the last time I was there. And they also have basically free health care, free childhood, free child care and all kinds of benefits we don't have. And it's a poverty that was non-existent in all those countries.
You're right. These are countries where people look out for each other. They take care of each other. They call themselves democratic socialists.
I'm tempted to move over there, but this is my home. My family's here in Minnesota. So.
Oh, when George W. Bush was elected, Louise and I looked into emigrating to Norway because both on my father's side, my mother's family's been here since the 1600s. But on my father's side, both my grandparents, my grandfather and grandmother, are both Norwegian immigrants. And so I contacted the Norwegian embassy saying, George W. Bush just got elected, or just got appointed president by our Supreme Court, and I'm 50% Norwegian. What's involved in emigrating? And it's incredibly difficult. You've got to prove fluency in the language. You've got to show familiarity with the country. You've got to have been there a certain amount of time. You have to have a certain amount of money. You can't. I mean, it's insanely difficult to emigrate to Norway unless you're you know, really genuinely, you know, like somebody who probably should be a Norwegian. But Gary, you're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you for the call. Oh, you've got Ted Kennedy's clip. Hang on just a second, Russell. Here's Ted Kennedy back, you know, may he rest in peace. Here's Ted Kennedy back when he was alive and thumping the podium.
$240 billion in tax breaks for corporations, $36 billion in tax breaks for small businesses, increase in productivity, 42% over the last 10 years. But do you think there's any increase in the minimum wage? No. What is the price? We ask the other side. What is the price that you want from these working men and women? What cost? How much more do we have to give to the private sector and to business? How many billion dollars more are you asking? Are you requiring? When does the greed stop?
And that's the problem. The greed never stops. The Koch brothers have more than any of us could imagine. And still they want more. The greed never stops. We're talking about mental illness. Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, what's up?
Yes, Tom. I don't know if you're familiar with this thing in Richmond, California, where the mayor's being backed by Chevron.
Yeah.
Through $2 million.
Yeah, the oil company's basically trying to buy the town by buying its elected officials.
And he's on TV. Did you hear him? He was on TV saying, I can't be bought if they want, because they're being sued. If they want to sit down, I'll listen to them.
Right.
You know that's a crock.
Yeah.
These guys are buying this election. I mean, this is greed. $2 billion to buy a mayor in Richmond?
Yeah.
He's heard of this town.
Yep.
That's bad.
Yep, I know. I'm with you. Russell, thank you for the call. Well said. Charles in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Charles.
Thank you very much, Tom. Yeah, I'm baffled that women are not getting equal pay. I'm sure that's not a problem over in Norway and Denmark. I'm baffled that corporations are not only externalizing their costs, but in a sense, they're externalizing their profits as well by sending them offshore, inversion, et cetera. But I think what baffles me the most is that these conservative elements are claiming to support the military, yet at the same time shutting down the government. I was a kid who just came from a upbringing of deprivation and saw the military as a way perhaps to equalize that. I live right outside of a military base now, and when the government was shut down for over 2 weeks, I was deprived the use of a commissary, and I'm sure that's only one of many resources that we were cut away from. I got a kid to support, and I need that commissary to be open.
Yeah, yeah. It's and the greed is not only affecting the military in the, you know, up close and personal ways that you're talking about, but look at how much of the military budget now is going to private for-profit corporations that are just skimming billions off the top. And, you know, it's the reason why here in Washington, D.C., if you just drive up into Virginia or down, I guess it would be down into Virginia, into the suburbs around Washington, D.C., what you find is mile after mile after mile of 20, 30-bedroom mansions in these giant gated communities where the billionaires who make money on the military-industrial complex live. It's mind-boggling. Thank you for the call, Charles. Esta in Deming, New Mexico. We got a little less than a minute, Esta. Quick point you want to make?
First of all, I want to thank you, Tom, for what you do.
Sure.
And I just would like the American people to remember, too, that if they would work to go out and buy American products, create more jobs here, maybe that would help us in this greed thing, too.
Yeah, agreed. So that was your point, is buy American products?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one, but we need to go the next step. We need to go back to a tax policy that doesn't encourage the you know, Walmart to buy goods from China and manufacturers to move to China. You've got, you know, Mr. Purdue down in Georgia, who has made his career over the last 30 years outsourcing American jobs, and now he's running for governor of Georgia. And it's like, you know, the citizens of Georgia are kind of catching up. Esther, thank you for the call. Citizens of Georgia are kind of catching up to him, but the reality is that this is not a consequence of the behavior of you or me or of American consumers. People buy things that are there. This is the consequence of government policy. Government policy bought and paid for by billionaires.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, as we speak, Amber Vinson, the second nurse in Dallas to acquire Ebola from Thomas Duncan, is leaving the Emory Hospital Ebola-free. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty impressive. I'm pleased for her. On the line with us is Balin Linekin. He's a contributor to Reason Magazine, a lawyer, executive director of KeepFoodLegal.org. Twitter at Keep Food Legal. Hey, Balin, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hank, thanks for having me back.
So what are you trying to keep legal?
Pretty much anything. If people want to consume it, then we're advocating on their behalf. So anything from raw milk to soda to food bought at a farmer's market to farm value-added products.
So let me get this right. I'm a food producer. And let's say I'm making junk food, okay, or sodas.
Sure.
And I do not pay the cost of the obesity associated with people consuming my product. I don't pay for their health insurance. I don't pay for the cost of their dealing with strokes or heart attacks or diabetes. Why do you think that these welfare queens in the food industry should continue to get this enormous subsidy from we the people?
Well, I don't believe in subsidies, and I don't believe in food welfare.
Do you know what an externality is?
I'm not an economist, but I do understand there are negative and positive externalities. So my argument would be, first of all, that junk food is not necessarily the sole contributor to obesity, and I'm not an expert on what causes or doesn't cause obesity, but lots of different things go into it. It's a sort of multifaceted.
But you don't want communities to be able to regulate the food in their environment, in their community ecosystem, as it were. You don't want them to be able to say, we want this kind of food in our schools and not that kind of food because it's better for our kids. You're really only concerned about the profits of the food manufacturers, right?
No, actually, I think that when it comes to schools, that's a different issue. But I think that, you talked about welfare and subsidies. A lot of the problems that we have, I think you might agree, are caused by things like subsidies for corn farmers who produce, corn that's turned into high fructose corn
syrup.
No,
I would say that's not one of our problems. I say that's a symptom of one of our problems, which is that we've got billionaires. Like the ones who founded and fund the Reason Foundation, we've got billionaires basically controlling our economy. And they're doing it to the detriment of average working Americans. They're doing it to the detriment of the health of our society. And they're getting massively richer every day.
So you wouldn't end the subsidies, I guess? Or
I would end the ability of the Koch brothers and other billionaires like them to buy politicians. I would end the idea that we live in a constitutional monarchy and these nine or five of the nine justices on the Supreme Court can actually make law. I would end those things, and with them would go the subsidies for high fructose corn syrup, for example. But the problem is the billionaires, Balin. It's not... what you're describing are symptoms of that problem.
All right. I don't exactly see it that way. And I think.
Well, how do you see it?
Well, I mean.
Where do those subsidies come from? They just magically appear?
They come from Congress.
Okay, and Congress did that because they just got a burr under their tail one day, and somebody in Congress woke up and said, "Hey, let's throw a couple hundred million dollars at Archer's Daniel Midland and Cargill."
I think I would end subsidies just as you would, but I don't know that attacking the Supreme Court is the way to do that. I actually believe that the Supreme Court has a role to play in this country.
Why? I don't disagree. The role is outlined in the Constitution. They're the final court of appeals. But the Constitution also, Article 3, Section 2, explicitly says that the Supreme Court shall be operate under exceptions defined by Congress and shall be regulated by Congress. And this court has refused to do either. They're way outside the law of the United States. But again, the question, if you want to, quote, keep food legal, if you want to keep food basically unregulated by we the people, and you still want billionaires like the Koch brothers to be able to buy politicians or food billionaires, the McDonald's and whatnot, how do you get to where there's any sort of, accountability? How in your mind do we stop this welfare cycle of these food producers, McDonald's selling us all kinds of food and not having to pay for the heart attacks that come from it? How do we do that?
I mean, how many heart attacks last year did a Big Mac's cause, if you can put a number on it?
I'm guessing it's quantifiable. I'm not the guy who can quantify it, but if it's even one, and McDonald's doesn't pay for it, it's wrong.
There are lots of different products, some of which are made by very small producers, which may or may not cause heart attacks. And again, I'm not a scientist, but I think we both are in the dark about whether a particular food or a particular food product caused some sort of illness in a particular person. And
I'm not in the dark about it.
Okay,
if you eat it that's rich in junk food and high in calories, you're going to end up with health problems. I'm not an idiot. I assume you're not either. I can't believe you're saying this. Yeah, I'm not a scientist. That's what Sam Brownback says about whether, he should stop subsidies to the oil industry because the Koch brothers live in Kansas.
You've referred to the Koch brothers now at least twice, and I don't know them. I've never met them. They may or may not be very nice people. And I don't know Sam Brownback. You asked me to come on to talk about an article on Minneapolis regulation of food, and you're talking about the Koch brothers. Why is that?
Because they're on my mind. Graham Nash was on Morning Joe this morning and had this to say about the Koch brothers.
It's appalling how many climate change deniers there are in this world that are paid to make sure that the Koch brothers can still sell all the stuff to us. And I often wonder, don't the Koch brothers have children? Don't they have grandchildren? Don't they know what they're doing in this quest for more money? They're already one of the richest families in the world. How much more do you need? I mean, seriously.
And I would say that while climate change is an externality of burning fossil fuels, that obesity, heart disease, cancer, fill in the blank, diabetes, are externalities of people consuming food that is less than healthy. And I don't understand why you don't want communities to be able to regulate that, just like I don't understand why anybody would want the Koch brothers to get richer denying climate change.
Well, let's talk about my article. It's an article on Minneapolis and their micromanagement of their food supply.
Yep.
And so specifically, Minneapolis is trying to get people to eat healthier by essentially compelling everything from gas stations to convenience stores to provide healthier food to people. And that includes selling cilantro at the gas station and things like that. It doesn't work. And, research has shown, and I'm not the first to say this, research has shown that simply filling up stores with healthier food is not the right answer. It doesn't make people eat healthier food, and it actually disadvantages the convenience stores, the small businesses, which I don't think are owned by the Koch brothers.
But if let's take an economic approach to this, Balin. If the externalities associated with the cheaper foods, the junk foods, if those externalities were paid for by the food manufacturers, so the costs of the cancers and heart disease and whatnot got attached to the products, then suddenly your ding-dongs would cost more than a fresh apple. Isn't that the best way to solve this problem rather than trying to ban these foods by force of law, instead simply extract the cost of their externalities?
Sorry, I kind of lost you there at the end.
Wouldn't it be better to tax these kinds of foods in a way that reflects their actual cost to society?
No, I think the problem is first of all that these foods are subsidized. The farmers who grow the foods are subsidized.
Not all of them.
Okay, many of them.
The cilantro in the 7-Eleven is probably not subsidized.
Right, but you're referring to the unhealthy foods, the ding-dongs. Right?
The unhealthy foods are subsidized, yes.
Yes, and so why not end those subsidies, which taxpayers pay for, rather than...
Well, I'm all in favor of that, but good luck. I mean, as long as you've got wealthy corporations and individuals in the fast food business, you know, buying politicians, it ain't going to happen.
I agree with you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, on that note, we'll wrap it up. Balin Lineken, contributor to Reason Magazine, keepfoodlegal.org is the website. Balin, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back 15 minutes past the hour. Is it Tara or Tara in Hopland, California? It's Tara?
It is Tara. I had to unclick the speaker.
That's quite all right.
About that.
So what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV and for calling.
I love your show, Tom. Watch it all the time. Don't hang up on me. I have a couple of things I just want to say real quick.
Okay.
To Graham Nash, the Kochs, they're not worried because they've got underground tunnels and places where they can go and live underground, their grandchildren. They're developing this. And they even have figured out a way to get sunlight down underneath into these living areas underneath. So that's why I think.
Do you have any evidence of that, Tara?
I once saw something on Jesse Ventura's show.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that show that was on for
Jesse,
a little while?
Jesse's been on our show a number of times.
And he did one whole show about these underground living complexes that rich people are pulling together. So that's where I got that from.
Wow.
Then as regards to Texas school books, did you see that John Oliver episode where he brought 97 climate scientists up on stage?
Oh, yeah.
And three science.
It's like a month ago.
Really,
yeah.
Very demonstrative of that.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. And then as far as greed, two things, the extinction of species like elephants and rhinoceroses, and even more is the bees.
Mm-hmm.
We could end life on Earth if we lose the bees.
Yep.
And people, I mean, the media hardly talks about it. All the time I write into Ed on MSNBC and, the kid in the morning, the Rhodes Scholar, I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Ronan Farrow.
Allen's.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I ask them all the time, please cover the bees. This is a really important issue. And nobody in the media is talking about the fact that we're losing one of the major sources for pollinating.
Right.
And I think that's really an important thing that greed is influencing. But even more important is, where does greed come from? And this is really interesting. I spent a lot of time thinking about this. And I would say that a propensity to greed comes from people who do not have faith that the Lord will provide. So the richest people who say they have God on their side and profess to be, you know, very religious, they're really demonstrating they don't believe God is on their side and that God will provide. So they have to step in and change the equation.
Yeah. I am guessing, particularly when Jesus said things like, you know, it's easier for a rich, for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven, that there's probably not a lot of very devout Christians who are very, very rich. But that said, I don't know. I would guess that the big variable, the thing that is driving greed on the part of the very wealthy, is not a lack of connection to religion, but a lack of connection to society. They don't feel connected to the rest of us. They feel like they're a species apart, a people apart. And I think that that's incredibly destructive. Tara, thank you for your call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Time for our crazy alert for the day. No?
I have so got brains.
Well, why don't you use them?
Go!
I haven't got a brain.
Dumbest thing ever.
Because I haven't got a brain.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Oh, if I only had a brain.
Oh, this is actually our If I Only Had a Brain alert. This is even better. Yeah, Alvin Cross Jr. of Albany, Georgia, accidentally sent a text message to the wrong person. The text message said, hey, got some weed? And the person he sent the text message to was his probation officer. Not a good idea. The police went over, found a bag of cocaine at his home. That was the end of that.
So,
yeah, there you go. So, all that said, greed. The first hour was kind of the perfect setup for somebody from the Reason magazine to come on and try to defend preventing communities from regulating their own food supply. It's kind of breathtaking to me that anybody would try to prevent a community from regulating its own food supply. It just blows my mind. Kevin in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC 1260. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was very glad you're talking about greed. I actually think it's one of those foundational things that could be probably diagnosed later on with anxiety disorders. But the same subject was on the other day, and I thought it's just about behind every single problem. It's behind Citizens United. It's behind opposition to the health care law, Affordable Care Act. It's behind not having an Ebola vaccine because it's not profitable. It's behind changes in the bankruptcy laws. It's behind the attack on the post office so they can privatize things. There's just about isn't anything that is a problem these days that can't be sort of boiled down to somebody is greedy and they want to make more money at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. And this is, it's Wetigo. This is this cultural mental illness that we started celebrating in 1980 with the election of Ronald Reagan. We celebrated it aggressively for the first two decades after his election in the 80s and 90s. Yeah, by 2000, 2001, we started going, well, maybe, maybe not. We started this kind of national dialogue about it. And now I think the pendulum's swinging the other direction. We'll see where it goes. But, Kevin, you're right. Greed is the root of all evil. Thank you. Nathaniel in Jonestown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Nathaniel, you wanted to talk about Norway and immigration?
Well, actually, your most recent point that you said just a couple minutes ago really stood out to me, which is the connection of greed to a disassociation from others.
Right.
Koch brothers can rape and pillage the country, if you will, because they don't have an interest in the people that they might be victimizing. I find it interesting that we're not connecting the last thought, which is that when you look at Norway, which is a homogeneous society, 86% of the people that live in Norway are from there originally. The 14% that are immigrants have to pass financial and literacy or language tests. Over three-quarters of Norway belong to the same church. You know, when our country is more of a multicultural mosaic, if you will, and so the sides that are kind of pulling at each other, it's almost impossible, I think, when you look through history, to find a successful experiment of a diverse multicultural society. We're, I think, probably the biggest experiment in that, and I don't know how well it's working. And so when you look at the Koch brothers, and they're looking at black and brown people and not even associating them with humanity, so it's quite easy for them to stuff whatever it is they're stuffing on them. I think there's a link between homogeneous societies that look after one another, and wonder of wonders, Norway has universal health care and free child care and a safety net. Well, doesn't that have more to do with the fact that they look and resemble like each other and they see themselves and their fellow man? Whereas here in the United States, I don't know if that's the case.
And I think it's a lot easier, Nathaniel. There's some truth to what you're saying. And I think that it's a lot easier in a society where everybody's basically related. I remember a couple of years ago, Louise and I were in Iceland. And we did our show for a week from Reykjavik and Keflavik. And we talked with a number of Icelandic politicians. And one of them said something to me that just kind of blew my mind. I said, are you prosecuting your bankers? Because they had they had found high crimes in the banking sector. Their banks had one of their banks had been one of the most spectacular failures in all of Europe in the banking crash, and it was taking down tens of thousands of middle class homeowners in Iceland. And this fellow said, "Well, here's the problem. Everybody in the country, there's only 300,000 people in the whole country. Everybody in the country is related to these guys, right? You can't prosecute somebody without going after your cousin. So, yeah, we're going to hold some people accountable, but it's going to be a little different than it might be in a larger society."